Chapter 19. They were all on board the ship now, and it was cool in the late afternoon wind. The flamingos were gone from the flat, although it was still uncovered. The flat was gray in the afternoon light, and there was a flock of willets working over it. Beyond was the shallow water, the channels that could not be seen for the mud, and in the background were the keys. Thomas Hudson was standing now on the flying bridge, leaning against a corner of it, and Antonio was talking to him.
"We don't get a high tide until after 11 tonight," Antonio said. "This wind is emptying the water right out of the bay and the flats, and I don't know what sort of depths we will have."
"Will it floater, or will we have to kedge off?"
"It will floater, but we haven't any moon."
"That's right. That's why we have these big springs."
"She only made last night," Antonio said. "She's new. We didn't see her last night because of the squall."
"That's right.
I sent George and Gil to cut some brush to stake the channel so we can get out. We can always sound it with the dinghy and get stakes on the points."
"Look, what I'd like to do when she floats is get into where I can bring the searchlight in the 50s to bear on the turtle boat and put somebody on board to blink to us if they come out on the skiff."
"That would be ideal, Tom, but you can't get in there in the dark. You could get in there with the searchlight and the dinghy sounding ahead of you and calling the soundings and staking, but nobody would come out then. They'd never come out."
"I guess so. I've been wrong twice today."
"You were wrong," Antonio said, "but it was just chances, like drawing a card."
"What's important is that I was wrong. Now tell me what you think."
"I think that if they haven't gone, and if we make no move to act as though we were not aground, they will come out to board the ship tonight. We do not look like anything except a pleasure craft. I'm sure they were inside the keys when it happened. They will feel contempt for us, and they will be sure we are weak because they have seen only one man all day in the dinghy, if they have watched."
"We tried to play it that way."
"Then if they find out how things are on the turtle boat, what then?"
"Ask Willie to come up here," he said to Antonio. Willie came up, still lumpy-looking from the mosquito bites. His scratches looked better, though, and he was wearing only a pair of khaki shorts. "How are you, jungle man?"
"I'm fine, Tom. I had to put some chloroform on the bites, and they stopped itching. Those damn mosquitoes are about a quarter of an inch long and black as ink."
"We got ourselves pretty well fucked up, Willie."
"Hell, we've been fucked up from the start."
"Peters?"
"We got him sewed up in canvas and some ice on him. He won't bring anything in the market, but he'll hold a couple of days."
"Listen, Willie, I was telling Antonio what I'd like to do was get into where the 50s and the searchlight would bear on that hulk, but he says we can't get in without spooking the whole ocean and that it's no good."
"Sure," Willie said. "He's right. That's three times you've been wrong today. I'm leading you by one less."
"Do you think they will come out and try and board the ship?"
"I doubt it like hell,"
Willie said. "But they could."
"They aren't crazy, but they could be desperate enough to try it."
The two of them were sitting on the deck of the flying bridge, leaning back against the stays and the canvas. Willie rubbed the part of his right shoulder that had begun to itch again on the canvas.
"They could come out,"
he said.
"They did a crazy thing when they made that massacre."
"Not from their point of view, then. You have to remember it was when they had just lost their ship and they were desperate."
"Well, they lost another ship today, as well as a comrade. Maybe they were fond of that son of a bitch."
"Probably, or they wouldn't have let him take up space."
"He was a pretty good guy," Willie said. "He took all that surrender talk and a grenade before he even made his play. He must have thought Peters was the captain because of his commanding manner and the way he spraked the crowd."
"I guess so."
"You know the frags went off below decks. They might never have heard them. How many rounds did you fire, Tom?"
"Not more than five."
"The character fired one burp."
"How loud did it all sound to you, Antonio?"
"It didn't sound loud," Antonio said. "We are downwind and to the north of it with the key in between. It didn't sound loud at all, but I could hear it clearly."
"They might never have heard it," Thomas Hudson said. "But they must have seen the dinghy running around and their ship careened. They're sure to think she's a trap. I don't think they will go near her."
"I think that's right,"
Willie agreed. "But do you think they'll come out here?"
"You and God know just as much about that as I do. Aren't you the one who's always thinking in the Germans' minds?"
"Sure," Thomas Hudson said. "Sometimes I'm pretty good at it, but I'm not so hot today."
"You're thinking all right,"
Willie said.
"You just ran into a bad streak."
"We could set a trap over there."
You're just as trapped as you're trapping on her,
Willie said. You go over and booby-trap her while it's still light.
Now you're talking, Willie said. That's the old Tom. I'll booby-trap both hatches and that dead crowd and the lee rail. You're thinking your way out of it now.
Use plenty of stuff. We got lots of stuff.
She'll be booby-trapped till Christ won't have her.
They're coming in with the dinghy, Antonio said.
I'll get Ara and the necessary and get over there,
Willie said. Don't blow yourself up.
Don't think too much, Willie said. Get some rest, Tom. You're going to be up all night.
So are you.
The hell I am. When you want me, they can wake me.
I'll take the watch, Thomas Hudson said to Antonio. When does our tide turn?
It's turned already, but it is fighting with the current that the strong east wind blows out from the bay.
Put Gil on the 50s and give George a break. Tell everybody to get a rest for the night.
Why don't you take a drink, Tom?
I don't want one. What are you giving them to eat tonight?
A big piece of that wahoo boiled with Spanish sauce and black beans and rice. There aren't any more canned fruits.
There were some on the list at Confites.
Yes, but they were crossed off.
Do you have any dried fruits?
Apricots.
Soak some tonight and give them to them for breakfast.
Henry won't eat them for breakfast.
Well, give them to him the first meal he eats well. Have you plenty of soup?
Plenty.
How is ice?
We have plenty for a week if we don't use too much on Peters. Why don't you bury him at sea, Tom?
Maybe I will, Thomas Hudson said. He always said he'd like it.
He said so many things.
Yeah.
Tom, why don't you take a drink?
All right, said Thomas Hudson. Do you have any gin left?
Your bottle is in the locker.
Do you have any water coconuts?
Yes.
Make me a gin and coconut water with some lime in it, if we have limes.
We have plenty of limes. Peters has some scotch of his hidden, if I can find it. Would you rather have that?
No, find it and lock it up. We might need it.
I'll make yours and hand it up.
Thank you. Maybe we'll have good luck and they will come out tonight.
I can't believe they will. I am of the school of Willie. But they might.
We look awfully tempting, and they need some sort of craft.
Yes, Tom, but they are not fools. You would not have been able to think in their heads if they were fools.
Okay. Get the drink. Thomas Hudson was glassing the keys with the big binoculars. I'll try to think in their heads some more. But he did not have any luck thinking in their heads. He was not thinking very well at all. He watched the dinghy, Ara in the stern and Willie out of sight round the point of the quay. He watched the flock of Willet fly up finally and turn and head for one of the outer keys. Then he was alone and he sipped the drink that Antonio had made. He thought how he had promised himself that he would not drink this trip, not even the cool one in the evening, so that he would not think of anything but work. He thought how he had planned to drive himself so he would sleep completely exhausted, but he made no excuses for this drink, nor for the broken promise. I drove myself, he thought. I did that all right. Now I might as well have this drink and think about something besides those other people. If they come out tonight, we'll have everything set for them. If they do not come out, I will go in after them tomorrow morning on the high tide. So he sipped the drink, which was cold and clean-tasting, and he watched the broken line of the keys straight ahead and to the westward. A drink always unlocked his memory that he kept locked so carefully now, and the keys reminded him of the days when they used to troll for tarpon when young Tom was a small boy. Those were different keys, and the channels were wider. There were no flamingos, but the other birds had been nearly all the same except for the flocks of big golden plover. He remembered the seasons when the plover were gray and the others when the black feathers had the golden tinge, and he remembered young Tom's pride at the first one he had ever brought home when he had his first single-barrel 20-gauge. He remembered how Tom had stroked the plump white breast and touched the lovely black undermarkings and how he had found the boy asleep that night in his bed with his arms around the bird. He had taken the bird away very softly, hoping he would not wake the boy. The boy did not wake. His arms just closed up tightly and he rolled onto his back. As he had taken the golden plover into the back room where the icebox was, he felt he had robbed the boy of it. But he had smoothed its plumage carefully and laid it on one of the grilled shells of the icebox. The next day he had painted young Tom a picture of the golden plover, and the boy had taken it with him when he went off to school that year. In the picture he had tried to get the fast, running quality of the bird, and the background was a long beach with coconut palms. Then he remembered one time when they were in a tourist camp. He had wakened early, and Tom was still asleep. He lay on his back with his arms crossed, and he looked like the sculpture of a young knight lying on his tomb. Thomas Hudson had sketched him that way, using a tomb that he remembered from Salisbury Cathedral. He was going to paint a canvas of it later, but he did not do it because he thought it could be bad luck. Not a good that did, he thought. He looked into the sun that was low now, and he could see Tom high up in the sun in a Spitfire. The aircraft was very high and very tiny, and it shone like a fragment of broken mirror. He liked it up there, he said to himself. And it was a good rule you made about not drinking. But over half the drink was still in the paper-wrapped glass, and there was still ice in it. Courtesy of Peters, he thought. Then he remembered when they lived on the island in the old days and how Tom had read about the ice age at school, and he was afraid it would come again. Papa, he had said, that is my only worry. It can't hit here, Thomas Hudson had said. I know, but I can't stand to think what it will do to all those people in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan, even Illinois and Indiana. I don't think we really have to worry about it, Thomas Hudson had said. It's a dreadfully slow process if it comes. I know, young Tom had said, but that's the only thing I ever really worry about. That and the extinction of the passenger pigeon. That Tom, he thought, and put the drink into one of the empty frag holes and glassed the keys carefully. He saw nothing that might be a sailing skiff, and he put the glasses down. The best times they had, he thought, were on the island and out west. Except Europe, of course. And if I think about that, I'll think about the girl, and it will be worse. I wonder where she is now. Sleeping with some general, I suppose. Well, I hope she gets a good one. She looked awfully well and very beautiful when I saw her in Havana. I could think about her all night, but I won't. It's indulgence enough to think about Tom. I wouldn't do that without the drink. I'm glad I took it, though. There is a time to break all your rules. Maybe not all. I will think about him for a while, and then I will work out our small problem for tonight when Willie and Ara get back. They're a wonderful team. Willie learned that awful Spanish of his in the Philippines, but they understand each other perfectly. Some of that is because Ara is a Basque and speaks bad Spanish, too. Christ, I'd hate to go aboard that hulk after Willie and Ara rig her. Go ahead, drink the rest of your drink, and think about something good. Tom's dead, and it's all right to think about him. You'll never get over it. But you are solid on it now. Remember some good, happy times. You had plenty. What were the happiest times, he thought. They were all happy, really, in the time of innocence and the lack of useless money and still being able to work and eat. A bicycle was more fun than a motor car. You saw things better, and it kept you in good shape, and coming home after you'd ridden in the Bois, you could coast down the Champs-Élysées well past the rond-point. And when you looked back to see what was behind you there, with the traffic moving in two streams, there rose the high gray of the great arch against the dusk. The horse chestnuts would be in bloom now. The trees would be black in the dusk as he pedaled now toward the Place de la Concorde, and the upstanding blooms would be white and waxen. He would get off the racing bicycle to push it along the gravel path and see the horse chestnut trees slowly and feel them overhead as he pushed the bicycle and felt the gravel under the thin soles of his shoes. He had bought this pair of racing shoes secondhand from a waiter he knew at the Select, who had been an Olympic champion, and he had paid for them by painting a canvas of the proprietor the way the proprietor had wished to be painted.
A little in the style of Manet, Monsieur Hudson, if you can do it.
It was not a Manet that Manet would have signed, but it looked more like Manet than it did like Hudson, and it looked exactly like the proprietor. Thomas Hudson got the money for the bicycle shoes from it, and for a long time they could have drinks on the house as well. Finally, one night, when he offered to pay for a drink, the offer was accepted, and Thomas Hudson knew that payment on the portrait had been finished. There was a waiter at the Closerie de Lilas who liked them and always gave them double-sized drinks so that by adding water they needed only one for the evening. So they moved down there. They would put Tom to bed and sit there together in the evenings at the old café, completely happy to be with each other. Then they would take a walk through the dark streets of Montagne-Saint-Geneviève, where the old houses had not yet been torn down, and try to come home some different way each night. They would go to bed and hear Tom breathing in his cot and the purring of the big cat that slept with him. Thomas Hudson remembered how people were horrified that they let the cat sleep with the small boy and that they left him alone when they went out. But Tom always slept well, and if he woke up, there was the cat, who was his best friend. The cat would let no one near the bed, and he and Tom loved each other very much. Now Tom was... The hell with that, he said to himself. It is something that happens to everybody. I should know about that by now. It is the only thing that is really final, though. How do you know that? He asked himself. Going away can be final. Walking out the door can be final. Any form of real betrayal can be final. Dishonesty can be final. Selling out is final. You're just talking now. Death is what is really final. I wish Ada and Willie would get back. They must be rigging that hulk up like a chamber of horrors. I've never liked to kill, ever. But Willie loves it. He is a strange boy and very good, too. He is just never satisfied that a thing cannot be done better. He saw the dinghy coming. Then he heard her purring hum, and he watched her get clearer and bigger, and then she was alongside. Willie came up. He looked worse than ever, and his bad eye was showing too much white. He drew himself up, saluted smartly, and said,
"Permission to speak to the captain, sir."
"Are you drunk?"
"No, Tommy, enthusiastic."
"You've been drinking?"
"Sure, Tom, we took a little rum with us for working around that cadaver. And then when we got through, Ara urinated in the bottle and then booby-trapped the bottle. It's double booby-trapped."
"Did you rig her good?"
"Tommy, a little tiny gnome no bigger than a man's hand couldn't get on her without being blown clean back to gnome land. A cockroach couldn't crawl on her. Ara was afraid the flies on the cadaver would set her off. We trapped her beautifully and delicately."
"What's Ara doing?"
"He's disassembling and cleaning everything in a frenzy of enthusiasm."
"How much rum did you guys take?"
"Less than half a bottle. It was my idea, it wasn't ours."
"Okay, get the hell down with him and clean the weapons and check the 50s.
"You can't check them really without firing them."
"I know, but you check them completely without firing them. Throw away the ammo that's been in the breaches."
"That's smart."
"Tell Henry to come up here and bring me a small glass of this and tell him to bring a drink for himself. Antonio knows what this drink is."
"I'm glad you're drinking a little again, Tom."
"For Christ's sake, don't be glad or sad about whether I'm drinking or not drinking."
"Okay, Tom, but I don't like to see you ride yourself like a horse riding on a horse's back. Why don't you be like a centaur?"
"Where do you learn about centaurs?"
"I read it in a book, Tommy. I'm educated. I'm educated far beyond my years."
"You're a good old son of a bitch," Thomas Hudson told him. "Now get the hell down and do what I told you."
"Yes, sir, Tommy. When we finish this cruise, will you let me buy one of the sea paintings out of the joint?"
"Don't shit me."
"I'm not doing that. Maybe the hell you don't understand all the time."
"That could be, maybe all my life."
"Tommy, I kid a lot. But you chased pretty."
"We'll see tomorrow. Tell Henry to bring a drink up, but I don't want any."
"No, Tommy, all we have tonight is a simple fight, and I don't think we'll have it."
"All right," said Thomas Hudson, "send it up. Get down off this fucking bridge and get to work." Chapter 20. Henry passed the two drinks up and swung up himself after them. He stood beside Thomas Hudson and leaned forward to look at the shadow of the far keys. There was a thin moon in the first quarter of the sky to the westward.
"Here's your good health, Tom," Henry said. "I didn't look at the moon over my left shoulder."
"She's not new. She was new last night."
"Of course, and we didn't see her for the squall."
"That's right. How's everything below?"
"Excellent, Tom. Everybody's working and cheerful."
"How are Willie and Ada?"
"They drank a little rum, Tom, and it made them very cheerful, but they're not drinking now."
"No, they wouldn't."
"I look forward to this very much," Henry said. "So does Willie."
"I don't, but it's what we are here to do. You see, we want prisoners, Henry."
"I know."
"Because they made that mistake on the Massacre Key, they don't want to be taken prisoner."
"I think that's putting it mildly," Henry said. "Do you think they will try to jump us tonight?"
"No, but we have to be alerted in case they do."
"We will be, but what do you really think they are going to do, Tom?"
"I can't figure it, Henry. If they are really desperate, they will try for the ship. If they have a radio operator left, he could fix our radio up, and they could go across to Anguilas and just call a taxi and wait for it to take them home. They have every reason to try for the ship. Somebody could always have talked around Havana, and they might know what we are."
"Who would talk?"
"Never speak ill of the dead," Thomas Hudson said. "But I'm afraid he might have when he was drinking."
"Willie is sure he did."
"Does he know anything?"
"No, he's just sure."
"It's a possibility, but they could also just try to make the mainland and make their way overland to Havana and get a Spanish ship out or an Argentine ship. But they don't want to be picked up on account of the massacre business, so I think they'll try something desperate."
"I hope so."
"If we can set it up," Thomas Hudson said. But nothing happened all night long except the movement of the stars and the steady blowing of the east wind and the sucking of the currents past the ship. There was much phosphorescence in the water from the weed that the big tides in the sea made by the wind had torn up from the bottom, and it floated in and out and in again like cold strips and patches of white, unhealthy fire in the water. The wind dropped a little before dawn, and when it was light, Thomas Hudson lay down and slept on the deck, lying on his belly with his face against a corner of the canvas. Antonio covered him and his weapon with a piece of canvas, but Thomas Hudson was asleep and did not feel it. Antonio took over the watch, and when the tide was high so they swung free, he woke Thomas Hudson. They got the anchors in and started in with the dinghy going ahead and sounding and staking any dubious points. The water on this flood tide was clean and clear by now, and the piloting was difficult, but not as it had been the day before. They had staked a branch of a tree in the channel where they had grounded the day before, and Thomas Hudson looked back and saw its green leaves moving in the current. Thomas Hudson looked ahead and followed the dinghy closely as she worked out the channel. They passed a long green key that had looked like a small round key when they had been head on to it. Then, ahead, in what looked like an unbroken but indented line of mangrove keys, Gil, who had the glasses, said,
"Stake, Tom, dead ahead of the dinghy against the mangroves."
"Check," Thomas Hudson said. "Is it the canal?"
"It looks to be, but I can't see the opening."
"It is very narrow on the chart. We will just about brush the mangroves on each side." Then he remembered something. "How could I be so stupid?" he thought. "But we'd better go on now anyway and out through the channel. Then I can send them back." He had forgotten to tell Willie and Ada to detrap the hulk of the turtle boat. That is a hell of a thing to leave around if some poor fisherman comes onto it. Well, they can go back and detrap it. The dinghy was signaling him now to keep hard over to the right of the three tiny spots of key and close against the mangroves. Then, as if to make sure he understood, they wheeled and came up.
"The channel's right in along the mangroves," Willie shouted. "Leave the stake on your left. We're going to head through. As long as you don't hear from us, keep on steaming. It's just a deep creek."
"We forgot to detrap that turtle boat."
"I know," Willie shouted. "We'll go back after."
Ada grinned and spun the dinghy around, and they went on ahead, Willie signaling that it was okay. They turned left and right and went out of sight into the green. Thomas Hudson steered in their wake. There was plenty of water, although no such water showed on the chart. This old channel must have been scoured out by a hurricane, he thought. Many things have happened since the USS Nokomis had boats sounding in here. Then he saw there were no birds rising from the mangroves as the dinghy went into the narrow brush river of the channel. While he steered, he spoke into the tubes to Henry in the forward cockpit. We may get jumped in this channel. Have your 50s ready to fire from either bow and a beam. Keep behind the shield and watch for the flashes and pour it onto them. Yes, Tom. To Antonio, he said, we may get jumped here. Keep well down, and if we're fired on, aim below the flashes and pour it on. Keep way down. Gil, he said, put your glasses away. Take 2 frags and straighten the pins and put them there in the rack by my right hand. Straighten 2 pins on those extinguishers and then put your glasses away. They'll probably hit us from both sides. That's how they ought to.
Tell me when to throw, Tom.
Throw when you see the flashes, but loft it plenty because it has to fall through brush. There were no birds at all, and since the tide was high, he knew that the birds had to be in the mangroves. The ship was entering the narrow river now, and Thomas Hudson, bareheaded and barefooted, and only wearing a pair of khaki shorts, felt as naked as a man can feel. You lie down, Gil, he said. I'll tell you when to get up and throw. Gil lay on the floor, with the 2 fire extinguishers that were loaded with dynamite and a booster charge, and were fired by the detonating assembly of a regulation frag, with its charger hacksawed off at the juncture of the fuse and a dynamite cap fitted and crimped on. Thomas Hudson looked at him once and saw how he was sweating. Then he looked at the mangroves on either side. I could still try to back her out, he thought. But I don't believe I could the way the tide is flowing. He looked ahead at the green banks. The water was brown again now, and the mangrove leaves were as shiny as though they were varnished. He looked to see where any had been cut or disturbed, but he saw nothing but the green leaves, the dark branches, and the roots that were exposed with the suction of the ship. There were a few crabs that showed when their holes under the mangrove roots were exposed. They went on, and the channel narrowed, but he could see it opening wider ahead. Maybe I just had the jitters, he thought. Then he saw a crab come sliding out fast from the high mangrove roots and plop into the water. He looked hard into the mangroves, but he could see nothing beyond the trunks and branches. Another crab came out very fast and went into the water. Just then they opened on him. He did not see the blinking flash, and he was hit before he heard the stutter of the gun, and Gil was on his feet beside him. Antonio was firing tracers where he had seen the gun flash. Where the tracers are going, Thomas Hudson said to Gil. Thomas Hudson felt as though someone had clubbed him 3 times with a baseball bat, and his left leg was wet. Gil lobbed the bomb with a high overhand motion, and Thomas Hudson saw its long brass cylinder and conic nose shining in the sun. It was spinning, not going end over end. Down, Gil, he said, and he thought he ought to drop himself. Then he knew he shouldn't, but he should hold the ship as she was. The twin 50s had opened up, and he could hear them pounding, and he felt the jolt of them through his bare feet. Very noisy, he thought. That will keep the bastards down. He saw the blinding burst of the bomb before the roar came and the smoke started to rise. He smelled the smoke and the smell of broken branches and burned green leaves. Get up, Gil, and throw 2 frags, 1 on each side of the smoke. Gil did not lob the frags. He threw them like the long throw from third base to first, and in the air they looked like gray iron artichokes with a thin trickle of smoke coming from them. Before they burst, cracking white in the mangroves, Thomas Hudson said into the tube, Shoot the shit out of it, Henry, they can't run in there. The smoke from the frags smelled differently from the bomb, and Thomas Hudson said to Gil, Throw 2 more frags, 1 beyond the bomb and 1 in this side, close. He watched the frags go and then hit the deck. He did not know whether he hit the deck or the deck hit him, because the deck was very slippery from the blood that had been running down his leg, and he fell hard. At the second burst, he heard 2 fragments tear through the canvas. Others hit the hull. Help me up, he said to Gil. You threw that last one close enough.
Where are you hit, Tom?
A couple of places. Ahead, he saw Willie and Ada coming up the channel in the dinghy. He spoke in the tube to Antonio and asked him to hand up a first aid kit to Gil. Just then he saw Willie drop flat in the bow of the dinghy and start firing into the mangroves on the right. He could hear the dat-dat-dat of his Thompson gun. Then there was a longer burst. He put in both his motors and headed for them with all the speed the channel would allow. His idea of this speed was not completely accurate because he felt very sick. He felt sick into his bones and through his chest and his bowels, and the ache went into his testicles. He did not feel weak yet, but he could feel the first onslaught of weakness. "Get your guns to bear on the right bank," he said to Henry. "Willie's found more of them."
"Yes, Tom, are you all right?"
"I'm hit, but I'm all right. What about you and George?"
"We're fine."
"Open up any time you see anything."
"Yes, Tom."
Thomas Hudson stopped his engines and commenced to go astern again slowly to hold the ship outside the angle where Willie was firing. Willie had a clip in now with tracers in it, and he was trying to spot the target for the ship. "You got it, Henry?" he asked through the tube.
"Yes, Tom."
"Work on it and around it with short bursts." He heard the 50s start slamming, and he waved Ada and Willie in. They came in as fast as the little motor would bring them. Willie was firing all the time until they were under the lee of the ship. Willie jumped aboard and came up on the flying bridge while Ada made the dinghy fast. He looked at Tom and Gil, who was putting a tourniquet on his left leg as close to the crotch as he could tighten it.
"Jesus Christ," he said. "What you got, Tommy?"
"I don't know," Thomas Hudson said. He did not know, either. He could not see any of the wounds. All he saw was the color of the blood, and it was dark, so he did not worry. But there was too much of it, and he felt very sick. "What's in there, Willie?"
"I don't know. There was a guy with a burp gun fired on us, and I got him, or I'm pretty sure I did."
"I didn't hear it with the noise you made."
"You guys sounded like an ammunition dump going up. Do you think there's anything still back there?"
"Still, maybe. We gave it the treatment."
"We'll have to work it out," Willie said.
"We can let these sons of bitches hang and rattle," Thomas Hudson said, "or we can go in now and finish it."
"I'd rather take care of you."
Henry was probing with the 50s. He was as delicate as he was rough with a machine gun, and with a pair of them, all his qualities were doubled.
"Do you know where they are, Willie?"
"There's only one place that can be."
"Then let's go in blasting and blow the shit out of them."
"Spoken like an officer and a gentleman," Willie said. "We sunk their skiff."
"Oh, we didn't hear that either," Thomas Hudson said.
"It didn't make much noise," Willie said. "Ada chopped her open with a machete and cut the sail up. Christ couldn't repair her in a month, the best day he was in that carpenter shop."
"You get up forward with Henry and George and have Ada and Antonio on the starboard side and let's go in," Thomas Hudson said. He felt very sick and strange, although there was no dizziness yet. The dressings Gil had put on contained the bleeding too easily, and he knew it was internal. "Put lots of fire on, and you signal me how to go. How close are they?"
"Right up against the shore, behind the little rise of ground."
"Can Gil reach it all right with the big ones?"
"I'll shoot tracers to show him the target."
"They'll still be there?"
"They got no place to go. They saw us break out the skiff. They're fighting Custer's last stand in the mangroves. Christ, I wish I had some Anheuser-Busch."
"Ice cold in cans," Thomas Hudson said. "Let's get in."
"You're awfully white, Tommy," Willie said. "And you've lost a lot of blood."
"Let's take her in fast, then," Thomas Hudson said. "I'm still all right." They closed fast with Willie with his head up over the starboard bow, sometimes waving a correction. Henry was traversing before and behind the rise that showed by the higher trees, and George was working on what should be the lip of the rise. "How is it, Willie?" Thomas Hudson said into the tube.
"You got enough hulls up here to start a brass foundry," Willie answered. "Lay her goddamn bow up against the bank and swing her broadside so Ara and Antonio can bear."
Gil thought he saw something and fired, but it was the low branch of a tree that Henry had cut loose. Thomas Hudson watched the bank come closer and closer until he could see individual leaves again. Then he swung her broadside until he heard Antonio firing and saw his tracers going in a little to the right of Willie's. Ada was firing now, too. Then he came a little astern on his motors and swung her close to the bank, but not so close that Gil could not throw. "Throw an extinguisher," he said, "where Willie's been shooting." Gil threw, and again Thomas Hudson marveled at the throw and at the shine of the brass cylinder whirling high through the air to drop almost exactly where it should. There was the flash and the roar, and then the rising smoke, and then Thomas Hudson saw a man walking toward them out of the smoke with his hands clasped over his head. "Hold up the fire," he said as rapidly as he could into two tubes, but Ada had already fired, and he saw the man slump forward into the mangroves on his knees with his head forward. He spoke again and said, "Resume fire." Then he said to Gil very tiredly, "Put in another one about the same place if you can, then put in a couple of frags." He had had a prisoner, but he had lost him. After a while, he said, "Willie, you and Otto want to have a look?"
"Sure,"
Willie said.
"But keep some fire on while we go in. I want to go in from the back."
"Tell Henry what you want. When do you want it off?"
"As soon as we clear the entrance."
"All right, Jungle Man," Thomas Hudson said. And for the first time, he had time to realize that he was probably going to die. Chapter 21. He heard the noise of a grenade bursting behind the small ridge. Then there was no more noise and no firing. He leaned heavily on the wheel, and he watched the smoke of the grenade thin out in the wind. "I'm going to take her on through as soon as I see the dinghy," he said to Gil. He felt Antonio's arm around him and heard him say,
"You lie down, Tom. I'm taking her."
"All right," he said, and he took a last look down the narrow, green-banked river. The water was brown but clear, and the tide was flowing strong. Gil and Antonio helped him to lie down on the planking of the bridge. Then Antonio took the wheel. He went astern a little more to hold her against the tide, and Thomas Hudson could feel the sweet rhythm of the big motors. "Loosen the tourniquet a little," he said to Gil.
"We'll get the air mattress,"
Gil said. "I like it on the deck," Thomas Hudson said. "I think it is better if I don't move too much."
"Get a cushion under his head,"
Antonio said. He was looking down the channel. In a little while, he said,
"They're waving us in, Tom."
And Thomas Hudson felt the motors go ahead and the ship slide forward. "Anchor her as soon as we're out of the channel."
"Yes, Tom, don't talk."
Henry came up and took the wheel and the controls when they anchored. Now that they were in the open again, Thomas Hudson felt her swing into the wind. "There's lots of water in here, Tom," Henry said. "I know, all the way to Caibetian, and the two channels are clear and well marked." "Please don't talk, Tom, just lie quiet." "Have Gil get a light blanket."
"I'll get it. I hope it doesn't hurt too much, Tommy."
"It hurts," Thomas Hudson said, "but not too bad. It doesn't hurt any worse than things hurt that you and I have shot together."
"Here's Willie," Henry said.
"You old son of a bitch," said Willie. "Don't talk. There were four in there with the guide. He was the main party. Then there was the one that Ara got by mistake. He feels awful about it when you wanted a prisoner so much. He's crying and I told him to stay below. He just loosed off like anybody would."
"What did you throw the grenade at?"
"Just a place I didn't like the look of. Don't you talk, Tom."
"You have to go back and detrap that hulk."
"We're going right away and we'll check the other place. I wish to Christ we had a speedboat. Tommy, those goddamn fire extinguishers are better than an 83mm mortar."
"Not the same range."
"What the hell we want with range? That Gil was throwing them into a bushel basket."
"Get going."
"How bad are you, Tommy?"
"Pretty bad."
"Think you can make it?"
"I'm gonna try."
"Keep perfectly still. Don't move for anything."
They were not gone long, but it seemed a long time to Thomas Hudson. He lay on his back in the shade of a canopy Antonio had rigged for him. Gil and George had unlaced the canvas from the windward side of the flying bridge, and the wind came fresh and friendly. It was not as strong as it had been yesterday, but it was steady from the east, and the clouds were high and thin. The sky was the blue sky of the eastern part of the island, where the trades blow strongest, and Thomas Hudson lay and watched it and tried to hold his pain in control. He had refused the hypodermic of morphine that Henry had brought him, because he thought he might still have to think. He knew he could always take it later on. He lay there under the light blanket with the dressings on his three wounds. Gil had sifted them all full of sulfa when he dressed them, and he could see sulfa spilled like sugar on the part of the deck where he had stood at the wheel while Gil had worked on him. When they had taken down the canvas so he would have more air, He had noticed the three small holes where the bullets had come through, and the others to the left and to the right. He had seen the gashes in the canvas from the grenade fragments. As he lay there, Gil watched him and saw his salt-bleached head and his gray face above the light blanket. Gil was a simple boy. He was a great athlete, and nearly as strong as Ada, and if he could have hit a curveball, he would have been a very good ballplayer. He had a great throwing arm. Thomas Hudson looked at him and smiled, remembering the grenades. Then he smiled just to look at Gil and the long muscles of his arms. "You should have been a pitcher," he said, and his voice sounded strange to him.
"I never had control."
"You had it today."
"Maybe it wasn't really necessary before," Gil smiled. "You want some water on your mouth, Tommy? Just not your head."
Thomas Hudson shook his head and looked out at the lake that was the inside passage. It showed white caps now, but they were the small waves of a good sailing breeze, and beyond them he could see the blue hills of the Tiriguaño. "That's what we'll do," he thought. "We'll head for the central or for the other place, and they may have a doctor there. No, it's too late in the season. But they can fly a good surgeon in. They're all fine people in there. A bad surgeon is worse than none, and I can lie quiet until he comes and they move me. I ought to take a lot of sulfa, but I shouldn't drink water. Don't worry about it, boy," he said to himself. "All your life is just pointed toward it. But why couldn't Ada not have shot that son of a bitch so he would have something to show for it all, so it would have done some good? I don't mean good. I mean so it would have been some use. Hell, if they had had the firepower we had. They must have pulled the other stakes on the channels to suck us into that one. But maybe if we had the prisoner, he would be stupid and know nothing. He would have been useful to have had, though. We are not being very useful now. Sure we are. We are detrapping that old turtle boat. Think about after the war and when you will paint again. There are so many good ones to paint, and if you paint as well as you really can, and keep out of all the other things and do that, it is the true thing. You can paint the sea better than anyone now if you will do it and not get mixed up in other things. Hang on good now to how you truly want to do it. You must hold hard to life to do it. But life is a cheap thing beside a man's work. The only thing is that you need it. Hold it tight. Now is the true time you make your play. Make it now without hope of anything. You always coagulated well, and you can make one more real play. We are not the lumpen proletariat. We are the best, and we do it for free.
"Don, do you want some water?" Gil asked again.
Thomas Hudson shook his head. Three chicken shit bullets, he thought, to fuck good painting and prove nothing. Why did the poor bastards ever make that error on the massacre key? They could have surrendered and been all right. I wonder who the one was who came out to surrender when Ada shot. He could have been like the boy they shot at Massacre Key. Why do they have to be such damned fanatics? We chased good, and we will always fight. But I hope we are not fanatics. Then he heard the noise of the outboard coming. He could not see it join them from where he lay, and then Ada and Willie came up. Ada was sweating, and they both were scratched by the brush.
"I ain't sorry, Tom," Ada said.
"Shit," said Thomas Hudson.
"Let's haul ass out of here," Willie said. "And I'll tell you, Ada, get the hell down on the anchor and send Antonio up here to take her."
"We're going into the central. It's faster."
"Smart," Willie said. "Now don't talk, Tom, and let me tell you."
He stopped and put his hand on Thomas Hudson's forehead lightly, and reached under the blanket and felt the pulse accurately but very gently.
"Don't die, you bastard," he said. "Just hold it and don't move."
"Roger," Thomas Hudson said.
"At the first fight, there were three deads," Willie explained.
He was to windward of Thomas Hudson, sitting on the deck, and he smelled sour of sweat, and his bad eye was swung wild again, and all the plastic surgery on his face showed white. Thomas Hudson lay very quietly and listened to him.
They had two burp guns only, but they were set up good. Gil's first extinguisher got them, and the 50s cut the shit out of them. Antonio hit them too. Henry can really shoot the 50s.
He always could.
I mean with the heat on. So we detrapped that joint, and it is very high now. Ara and I cut all the wires, but we left the stuff. She's okay, and I'll pinpoint the location of these other crafts on the chart.
The anchor was up, and the motors were turning. We didn't do so good, did we? Thomas Hudson said.
They outsmarted us. But we had the firepower. They didn't do so good either. Don't say anything to Ara about the prisoner. He feels bad enough. He says he squeezed off before he thought.
The ship was heading toward the Blue Hills and gathering speed.
Tommy,
Willie said,
I love you, you son of a bitch. And don't die.
Thomas Hudson looked at him without moving his head.
Try and understand if it isn't too hard.
Thomas Hudson looked at him. He felt far away now, and there were no problems at all. He felt the ship gathering her speed and the lovely throb of her engines against his shoulder blades, which rested hard against the boards. He looked up, and there was the sky that he had always loved, and he looked across the great lagoon that he was quite sure now he would never paint, and he eased his position a little to lessen the pain. The engines were around 3,000 now, he thought, and they came through the deck and into him. I think I understand, Willie, he said.
Ah, shit, Willie said. You never understand anybody that loves you.